To America, welcome to the tongue where our loyalty lies only with warrior, and they will scrap only if I give them the order. And you feeling itchy, you got something to say, just know we hop this way. Nobody else is suited for this other than us. I know it's crazy, but we work with it and don't give a what. Welcome to the show. If you don't know the name, we call it Hop This Way.
Welcome back to all our itchy onions out there across the salt and across the pond. It is us, it is I, and we, the Hop This Way Show. It's your boy Zeus, and joining me as they do from week to week is the greatest tongue on the planet. That's right. And we've got the full tongue here today and starting us off. That's right. The wise one to the middle. The yogi herself, Miss Rebecca.
Am I wise? Hello, guys.
Well, that's why we've got you in the middle. You're in the top middle. That means you're the wise one for us.
Okay, I'll pretend I am.
Well, you know what? When it comes to wisdom, there is you, and then of course there is the shaman, or the sifu, if you will, of our tongue, and that is the professor himself, Frank Zhang. How you doing, Frank?
Good to be back, everybody.
Yo, it has been a while. Glad to see you. We're starting to forget what you look like.
We don't all look the same, dude.
And that's why we haven't seen Frank in a while. And then down below, we've got he is an actor, he is a producer, he is a musician, he's the guy that made our theme song, the one, the only, Money Matt Chua.
It is me. Hello.
How's it going, brother?
I'm good. As if she's the wise one, then I'm the wise ass of this entire clique.
You know what? Truer words may never have been spoken.
Yeah.
Good to see you. Good to see you, my friend.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. All right. As we get our WWE on right there, you know, we can't talk a little wrestling and a little aggression without having our enforcer of our tongue. That's right. The one of the only. It's Stephanie Young. What? She's our enforcer. How is that an insult?
No, you're just like, oh, yeah, we're getting to the wrestling. And while we're wrestling, how about this enforcer? I'm like, what?
You were saying, yeah. I mean, you and I knew what that was. I mean, we were both going with the LA
wrestling and swords.
Meanwhile, I'm the one with the least amount of training. So, again, I think this is funny.
Wow. I mean, just because you have the least amount of training does not mean that you have the least amount of whoop asses.
I don't know karate, but I know crazy.
We're off to a great start already. This is fantastic. And I mean, I feel like the energy's up a little bit, and I feel because our guest this week was with us so much earlier during the pre-show, and we got to get to know him a little bit, and I can feel it. I'm feeling like there's a little something extra in the air today. We've got ourselves a true performer from not only the stage, but the screen. That's right. You know him as Marcel, but we know him as our buddy, Telly Leon.
Yeah. Hi, friends. Yay. How are you?
How are you, Kelly? Thanks for joining.
Oh, I'm thrilled to join this motley crew. What a fun group.
That is the best way anybody has put it. Right? That's it. Right here. Motley crew.
We are a motley crew.
Exactly. Not the motley crew, but as if we were.
Yeah, no hair bands.
We all know that Steph would be Tommy Lee. Telly, you know what? Thanks so much for joining us on the show, and for joining this motley crew, as you put it. I start off every show by asking the guests, especially if it's their first time here, for those of the fans of the show that maybe aren't familiar with you before this, can you give us, what is Telly's origin story? What got you from your beginning to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I'm a Chinese-American kid, and I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. My parents are actually they are from Canton, China. They're from Guangzhou, and then they went to Hong Kong, and then they came to New York City in the 70s, and then they were like, we're gonna have a kid here. So I'm second generation, because you know they immigrated over, and I was the ABC, they call it, the American born Chinese,
right?
Growing up in New York, and you know, like most immigrant parents, I think they were like, oh, we really hope our only Chinese son, he, you know, goes to Harvard, becomes a doctor, marries a nice Chinese girl, and gives him lots of Chinese babies. And none of the above happened. I did the exact opposite. Like, I would like save up my allowance money. And, I went to a math and science high school in New York City, but I would save up my allowance money to go see Broadway shows and get half price tickets and like student rush tickets. And that's sort of how I got into acting and theater. And then I ended up going to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh to study theater. They have a really reputable school of drama. And that's been my path ever since. And, you know, once in a while, I get the lucky happenstance of being on a television show like Warrior. But most of the time, I do a lot of stage and a lot of musical theater, whether that's performing on Broadway or in regional theaters or, oh, gosh, there's me.
Ooh,
I said, there's me with my tits out, you know. Which is,
you playing Aladdin?
Yeah, Disney was like, we're gonna show a little cleavage. That's what's gonna get everybody into the theater to go see Aladdin on Broadway. But yeah, that's normally what I do is a lot of musical theater. And I'm actually coming to you here from the University of Michigan right now in Ann Arbor, where I'm directing the musical theater students in a production of A Little Night Music by Stephen Sondheim. So I'm also starting to do
that. Oh wow.
Yeah.
Now we talked a little bit before the show started about your love for teaching. Now, how did you find this love for teaching? Was this something you had always kind of had in you growing up, or was it something you kind of fell into?
You know, I think I recognized sort of like in my like early 30s that I would not have the theater career that I had it not been for really great teachers. And even in college, you know, my senior year in college, I was lucky enough to have an alum of Carnegie Mellon come and be a guest director, Billy Porter. He came and directed me in my senior musical, you know. And this was before Billy Porter, you know, won the Tony for Kinky Boots and won the Grammy and won the Emmy for Pose. Like this is sort of when Billy was sort of around my age going, I want to flex other muscles besides acting. I also want to try directing. And he thought, what a great safe place to do that. Let me go to my hometown. He's from Pittsburgh. And let me go to my alma mater. And I was lucky enough to have him as a teacher. And ironically, the musical he directed me in was another Stephen Sondheim musical called Company. And so now fast forward, you know, almost 20 years after that, now I'm doing the same thing. I'm sort of trying to walk in Billy's shoes and inspire the next generation, and hope I leave something with the students that they'll remember and that they'll use. And so I'm really enjoying that part of it, the paying back. Now that I've been in this business for 20 years, I really enjoy being in a classroom with them, you know. And I'm not done learning, and I'm not done performing for sure, but I really like being able to share with them sort of what I've learned.
And Mike Baker says that Telly has such an amazing singing voice on the show, on the stage. Were you a singer when you were young as well?
I was a shower singer, for sure. So you know, and I was always a musical kid. Like I was, you know, I took piano lessons as a little kid. Again, like Chinese, growing up Chinese, you know, you play the piano or the violin, like one of those.
I don't know anything about that.
I was already very musical and I loved it. I didn't really think I was gonna be a singer, but for sure, as I started, you know, getting into Broadway musicals when I was in high school and doing my high school musicals and stuff like that, I realized, I think like I have a good instrument in there. And then as I started taking class, and then of course, when I got most of my training at Carnegie Mellon, and then learning on the job on Broadway. So yeah, that's sort of how singing came to be in my life. I didn't have a musical family or anything at all. I also enjoy, you know, when I'm not in a Broadway show, I do a lot of club acts. And I do, I sing a lot with like a jazz trio all the time, and I do concerts, or I do concerts with symphonies and stuff. And so I remembered, like, for my audition for Marcel, I did my sides and I did the scenes that were meant to be, you know, with Marcel and Hong. But then I also, they were like, do you have any clips of you singing? And I was like, do I have any clips of me singing? I just sent them like footage of me in a club, and I think they were like, oh, that's it, like that's that club, that he is a club singer, like that's no acting involved, this is what he does actually.
Cool. Like some things are just meant to be.
When did you realize it was going to be a career for you? When did you realize that this, the music and the theater setting was going to be a career for you?
Yeah, you know, I always did it for fun in high school. And I think there were, probably subconsciously, there were several moments that I realized this could be a job, that I could do this for a living. One of them was watching Lea Salonga win a Tony Award on TV. And I remember that image so clearly of this young, you know, young girl, 20 years old, 21 years old, walking up on the stage and accepting a Tony Award for Miss Saigon, and like seeing an Asian face, you know, on my television that was being celebrated for her work in theater. I don't know. I don't even know if like I thought I want to do that or I want to do what she's doing, but I think subconsciously, you know, that's why representation does matter, because you have to see it to believe it. And I think somewhere in my 11-year-old brain, as I was watching the Tony Awards, something clicked inside me that just went, oh, that's also an option. You know what I mean? Because, you know, again, I don't think there are very many, especially me growing up, I didn't see very many Asian faces on TV. I just didn't. And this is sort of another reason why. Oh, thank you. I think that's why Warrior is important, you know, because here we are, like a representation of Asian faces on TV, and the way that you've not necessarily seen them all the time, you know, that we can be sexual, we can be badass, we can kick ass, we, you know, oh my gosh.
Telly, I get so emotional over all of that. I do.
Yeah.
Because we're just not there, you know, and seeing the surge, this surge is just, it's exactly what we need.
Yeah. You know, like, I mean, to shout out another like Netflix show, like Beef, I thought was like, oh my gosh, yes, to see angry Asian people, to see Asian people with a vengeance. I said, yes, I love this, you know.
Multidimensional.
That's right.
Just not monolites.
Yeah. Rebecca, like there's, you know, I think for so long in Hollywood and even Broadway, like we've not been asked to show all of those sides of us. And and what I love about the gigantic cast of Warrior that exists is that you sort of get all of it. You get the wide spectrum of stories, which is great.
Yeah.
Just can I go for another question? Just going back to your teaching abilities. I remember when you were shooting Warrior in Cape Town, you hosted a screening of Ensemble,
yes,
which is a documentary about the backstage of not this one.
No, that's right.
The Broadway, right? So
yes.
How was it?
Yeah. So what ended up happening was when I found out I was doing Warrior, I was so thrilled, and I realized I was going to be in Cape Town for 4 months. Now Marcel he's like in and out of the season, so I had a lot of downtime. So in that downtime, you know, Chen, who's like the best scene partner ever, but also like the best Cape Town tour guide I could ever ask for. He like showed me around, and he took me to all the good eats, and we ate a lot. You know, we definitely ate a lot after we were done being naked on the show. We're like, we can be naked on the show, and then after that, we can like eat as all of Cape Town. So and we did.
I call him the always eating Hong.
Yes. Well, it's so funny because, you know, that's not just Hong. That's Chen. Like, he's always ready. But then the other thing that ended up happening was I have a buddy, Pierre. Pierre is also in the cast of Aladdin on Broadway. He's actually still in Aladdin right now. During COVID, it was his idea and my friend Aaron Albano's idea to gather 13 Broadway dancers together in the middle of the Broadway shutdown. And we did a socially distanced conversation where everybody sat in a circle that was, you know, 6 feet apart, socially distanced. Everybody was tested for COVID. We did a masked dance class. And then after that, we sat everybody down and we talked about sort of the state of Broadway, what it meant to be a dancer. And we wanted to capture, you know, we wanted to capture dancers, Broadway performers at a time where we didn't know when or if live theater was ever coming back.
Right.
So this was March of 2021. And if we can all sort of rewind our brains back to what that felt like, March of 2021, we just, the amount of uncertainty, you know, and so we had so many, you know, we wanted to capture these real life stories of what was happening. And so what a wonderful, Pierre is from Cape Town, and he says, well, why don't you meet some of my friends who opened a school for musical theater in Cape Town called Lambda. And what ended up happening was we did a screening there. I ended up doing a whole bunch of like just pro bono musical theater teaching there and working with the students, which was really great and really rewarding for me. You know, that's the thing about teaching that I have really discovered is, you know, it's my job to give something to the students, but what the students give back to me as a human being and as a teacher, that's like, that's immeasurable. That's unbelievable. So
yeah, you always learn when you are teaching.
Sorry?
You always learn when you are teaching.
That's right. Yeah.
So the Bombshell Blurred says, that's awesome. Derek Chin, I think, is throwing some shade at Simu Liu because he says, he's so good, he should have been in Barbie.
Yes! Oh, that would have been fabulous.
Yeah. Raghu says, I got to say, the singing skills really paid off so well, which added another nice element to War by just expanding the whole universe. And Derek says War is all about representation, and Telly did not disappoint.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And you talked about that representation, and it is multi-leveled for you, because it's not just about Asian representation. It's also about, you know, the LGBTQ representation as well. And we see it with all races on this and all kind of walks of life. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, and how much about that did you know about Warrior before being cast on the show?
Well, I sort of learned. I'm going to give you a little bit of the origin story of how Marcel came to be, because when the third season was happening, one of the executive producers, Chris Arruda, you know, he is open and he is out, and he is an LGBTQ artist, and he works a lot in post production. He was like, we have to give Hong. We have to give Hong a real love story. Like, if we're going to do a season three, like, it's amazing that, you know, we have this gay character. It's amazing how we show the allyship that his brothers show him, that he's like, yeah, I don't care who he sleeps with. He can scrap. That's all we care about. And we love him. And he's a brother, right? Like, that is, that's the sort of one of the most amazing, like, representations of allyship, because it's not a big deal. Which is like sort of the next step, right? In like queer representation. He was like, but let's like have him fall in love. And I think what the executive producers, Josh and Evan, ended up doing with the Hong Marcel storyline, and I think all the storylines, you know, season three is so much about like, is there a way out of San Francisco? Is there is there a possibility of life outside Tong, life outside the Tong, right? Whatever that Tong gang life means, like, can you physically leave it, but can you also like mentally and emotionally leave it? Because I think once you're in that mentality, it's really hard to break out, right? Because the unknown is so scary. So they were like, let's create this character, this nomadic jazz singer who goes from port to port, who is really well traveled, really worldly, who can float between worlds and fits in everywhere. And I also, and be that source of inspiration for Hong, like to say, hey, Hong, like there is a life outside the Tong. There could be if you just have to open the door of opportunity and walk through it. So I think that's sort of what Marcel represented on the show. I also just love that, you know, the show takes place in San Francisco. And when we think San Francisco, now we know that it is like a queer mecca. You know, it is like a very inclusive, very gay friendly place, you know, historically at the forefront of LGBTQ rights, right? With Harvey Milk and all the history there. But we were like, what was San Francisco like then? In the late 1800s for the queer community. And we realized, you know, there weren't out and open gay bars, but there were spaces with people that hosted salons and parties and things like that, where the queer people could feel they could let their hair down, where they could feel like they could be themselves. And I think that's sort of what happened on episode 4, was this eye-opening thing for Hong to go, oh my gosh, here are my people. Like, do you know what I mean? Here's my community, here's my tribe. And to know that there are other, you know, he belongs in the Tong and he's a brother there, but there's also another community of queer people that he could belong in, that for him, I thought, you know, it was, I think Marcel is sort of the gateway to that. I'm a gateway drug for that.
Oh, but then the heartbreak of him being torn between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about that scene where Marcel and Hong had that argument after the cop is found in that bar, right?
Like at the bar, right?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that conflict because of the things that Hong said And Marcel was saying, this is my world. I don't remember the exact words, but he was saying that this is my universe, this is my world. And Han was saying this isn't anywhere, right? So what are your thoughts on that kind of conflict? Because it seemed to me like Han was saying to Marcel, this isn't the real world, but Marcel was saying to Han, yes, it is. This is my world.
Mm-hmm. I think they're both right. You know, I think that's what makes that scene so good, is they did grow up so differently. You know, like Marcel did grow up. He had to be nomadic because, you know, he lost his mother very young. His father was sort of, you know, didn't really play a role in his life. He had to fend for himself. He had to travel. He had to sing for his supper and travel port to port. You know what I mean? Yes, it sounds very glamorous. But, you know, like that is how he makes a living. That is how he survives. In the same way that for Hong, he, you know, being part of a Tong, he had a rough childhood too, Hong. The way he survives is by joining a band of brothers. So for both of them, this is all they know. This is all they know how to survive. I don't think Marcel would survive if he didn't go from port to port and find the queer communities to hang on to. Not mm-hmm. only were they the people that hired him, they were also the people that like protected him. That was his community. Well, same thing with Hong. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for these Tongs and this sense of belonging, like and the support that he got from them, like where would they be? You know. So they're both speaking about survival, and I think they're both right in that scene. And it should feel difficult. It should feel really hard for Hong to make that decision.
I think that's what was key with how Marcel came across, you know, projecting exactly that. Like, just because, you know, I'm in this other world, that doesn't mean it isn't precarious also.
Yes.
Like, something could change like that. And that definitely came through, because anyone who's actually watched period pieces and things like that, you know that a society, you know, that has to be sort of underground like that, one little piece can change. Maybe I've watched too many movies, but you already, that feeling comes right through, that it's survival, and one little snap and your world could change. Marcel's world could change like that. That came through.
I also think it's fascinating, and I really have to applaud the writers for this, that they made that cop, who you've seen be an absolute like asshole, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To the Tong, like I can't remember, probably episode 3 or 4 or something like that, earlier on you see the but he is a member of the queer community. And yeah. In that moment, in that bar where it's bought out and it's all us, it's just a night where we're surrounded, it should be a safe space. It's interesting, like what they've done is they've put Hong in the wrong to go, that person deserves that safety in that space too, right? Yeah. And I understand he's done, you know, what I love about that is it creates nuanced characters, that nobody's really good, nobody's really evil, you know what I mean? Like, you can't really pick a good or a bad guy, you know what I mean? Like, we're all very complex. We all have moments where we are people and we have good moments and we have bad moments. We do good things and we do things that are not great, you know what I mean? So I think that what I love is the nuance that they created in that moment.
Yeah, because everybody's playing their role in society. The cop has his profession, and he has to be that thing, you know, as a cop, as in a society where everybody is very sexist and racist. Mm-hmm. He couldn't be different in that environment, but
right.
On the club, he could be himself. Right. And I remember, I think Hong recognized him from where he has seen him. I think it's the moment they invaded halfway Tong, looking for the printer, the I forgot the name of the machine where they were printing money, and they arrested Young Jun.
Yes.
And he beat Young Jun very hard. And I think Hong remembered him on that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's really a conflict for him. And then just after that, he and Marcel had this, you know, shock on that both realities that couldn't kind of live in the same place. And I mean, at least in his mind, because he was passing through so much, and that would be too much for him to be in the same place as that cop. It's very, very good episode. The writers are very brilliant on this show.
And Chen's acting, I mean, you can see the trauma on Hong's. You can see it coming out. It was extremely traumatic, and all of that rang true.
Speaking of the acting on there, we got a compliment here for you, Telly, from Facebook, from a one Miss Larissa Jordan, who says, you were amazing, Telly. Oh,
thank you, Larissa. Thank you.
And she was amazing as well on that show as well. We loved her episode with Little Zeus.
Little Zeus.
Heather Joy Gutierrez also says that's what made that scene so heartbreaking, talking about earlier. And Derek says, during the season, there was a lot of fan discussion about how the relationship between Hong and Marcel would end. A large percentage thought that Marcel would meet a tragic end. Glad it wasn't predictable. Now, I'm going to say, if you watched our show throughout the season, no offense, I thought you were going to be the bad guy. I thought for sure you were setting Hong up somehow. and I'm happy I was wrong. I just think it would have ended a little happier for everyone. Go ahead.
That's interesting because it's interesting, like, and maybe that shows how like suspicious we can be about like a relationship that's actually like that appears very functional. Like they're actually like right. Like they actually love each other. There's got to be something up. Like they're so nice to each other. Wait a minute, that's suspicious. Hold on a minute. I am very thankful I don't die. So you know, as we all keep fingers crossed for a season 4, I was like, I don't die. I was like, I don't know. He might pop up in San Francisco again. Who knows? So I'm very thankful that they didn't.
I mean, him. More sticky to be had.
And more sticky.
Yeah.
Which you can pick up your own T-shirt of "Let's Get Some Sticky" at the Hop This Way show at myshopify.com, where we've got those "Let's Get Some Sticky." We've also got some wine tumblers. Got some shirts, and of course, you know, good way to keep your coffee going. And thank you, Steph, for giving me that little in there for us to get a little plug in. this is amazing. Now, so as a theater person, I've asked so many people this, and it seems every week I keep asking the same question. This cast seems to be predominantly theater cast. Would you, and I don't mean to steer your answer. I don't mean to direct the witness, if you will, but would you think that has anything to attribute to how much of a family this feels like, and how everyone who comes on seems to talk about how much they love the show and how much they're willing to fight for it?
Yeah, I think so. First of all, like, they're theater actors, and why I love being one is, you know, listen, we show up to a theater 8 times a week. I probably spend more time with my cast than I do with my own family when you're doing a Broadway show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in fact, I don't know if you all know this, but Hoon and I actually made our Broadway debuts together. We were both in Flower Drum Song on Broadway in 2002. Playing Chow, and I was in the ensemble and understudying Wong Ta, the lead character, and we both were. That's how I met. I met Hoon Lee in 2002. So we've known each other for a very long time, and that cast was very. It was an all Asian cast. We were very, very close, and that cast has remained close. So I remembered like auditioning for the show, and like Hoon was the first person I called for tips. Like, what do I need? What's the tone of the show? Like, what's happening? So you know, and he was so helpful. And even Cape Town, like I remembered, like they were like, where do you want to live in Cape Town? I said, where's Hoon living? And I think I lived like a block away from Hoon, you know, like I was just like, I'm going to stick with my family. And that's because theater people, we do become a tight little family. Mm-hmm. I think in particular with Warrior, the fact that we do film in Cape Town, the fact that it is everybody sort of uprooting their lives and coming from all over the world to like live in Cape Town for 4 months to make the thing. I think that really attributes to the family vibe of the show, and also the fact that we all believe in it. You know, yes, it's a job, and yes, it's how we're paying our bills, but we also really care and really want to make sure this show and these stories live on.
Amy Lee asking you to sing a line. Now you're gonna have to wait for that, Amy. You're gonna have to wait to see what happens in the Tong trials.
Oh gosh.
And Adrian says that is so cool, and it is so cool. And of course, you talked about your theater family. Now you being from musicals and stuff. How important was it for you to be a part of the Warblies?
Oh, the Warblers on Glee. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh goodness. That was really fun, actually. You know, and I think I was on season two, and right. I was sort of recurring on that show, and we were like the second or third episode in season two. And this was, you know, you have to remember, like, Glee, we sort of think of as now as like a cultural phenomenon, right? Like there are kids, there's a generation of people that were introduced to music this way because they watched Glee every night, you know, prime time. What's amazing is that show continues to like build fans because now it's on Netflix and streaming and all that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We didn't know it was going to be that big of a deal at the time. We just didn't. Like, we had no idea, you know? And for me personally, like, I remembered like auditioning for the show and thinking, oh, this will be a great gig. And they were like, yeah, it's going to be two or three episodes. We're going to introduce Darren Criss's character, Blaine, and then like he'll eventually transfer schools. But what ended up happening was they were like, oh, these boys in suits, like the fans love this. Yeah. So they ended up keeping Darren, his character Blaine, at Dalton Academy for longer, which meant we were there longer and there were more and more numbers for us. And all of a sudden, you know, they were like, here's the Super Bowl episode and we've written the Warblers in it. Like now they're in it. You know what I mean? Like, so all the time I would like fly back to New York thinking, okay, like that was probably the last Warbler episode. Like, see you later. And then like a couple weeks later they go, oh, fly back to LA. Like you shoot another one. Do you know what I mean? So, it was really great to be a part of something like that, that I feel like has such an international appeal and people really like think of fondly because it's a part of their childhood soundtrack, I think is really cool.
And what a talented cast though, like overall talented cast. And now you're talking about Darren Criss, who for nerds like me know that he's Superman. He's not James Gunn Superman, but he's Superman in the animated universe. So.
Oh yeah.
That's right. So,
I didn't know that.
Yes, yeah. He's for the Crisis on Infinite Earths. I am such a nerd. I am not cool by any means. Now, speaking of, you know, him playing Superman, you know, that's going to be a big thing for him. What about you, Kelly? What's still on your bucket list? Like, as a career professional, what's on your professional bucket list?
You know, what's interesting is I, during COVID, I started directing more, and I'm actually finding it to be a very rewarding experience. So, you know, I've actually directed now at universities three times. You know, I directed Godspell during the pandemic, which ended up being a pandemic production that we did here at the University of Michigan. You know, there was no audience. The cast was masked. I had to stage them nine feet apart the whole time. You know, we had to COVID test every other day. Like, it was a wild experience. We made a movie and we streamed it. And I realized, I was like, oh, like if I can direct during a global pandemic, like I could certainly direct when it's over. And I've really enjoyed it. I then directed Rent at UC Irvine in California, and now I'm back here at Michigan directing another show. And I'm really loving it. So it's interesting. I'm not done performing at all because I still love performing, but the amount of creativity that is asked of me as a director, the way I have to communicate with costume designers, set designers, lighting designers, the way I have to communicate with actors and actors who have all different types of training, they, you know, and being able to get a good result out of all of these different people and change sort of how I communicate with them. That's been a great artistic challenge for me. So I would love to continue doing that. But as a performer, I don't know. That's a really interesting question. You know, I've not done a film, and I would really, even if it's a teeny tiny part, I would love to be in a feature someday. Mm. I've not done that.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised, especially with your resume. Like,
it's just never happened, you know. That they always say, like, oh, you're in, you know, I have a friend who's been in New York. He's probably 10 years older than me. And, you know, every New York actor gets their Law and Order credit because that show was filming in New York for so long, for four decades. Yes. And so, you know, I have a friend who's like this Broadway actor that goes from Broadway show to Broadway show to Broadway show. He's never been on Law and Order. And that's actually like a line in his Playbill bio all the time. Like, you know, I have never appeared in Law and Order because every time you look through a Playbill, everybody lists their Law and Order credit in the Playbill. So, that's probably mine. I've never done a feature, you know, but I would
guess
love
that's
to
what
do
I, And I guess I should be happy now that there's a Law and Order Toronto just started.
Oh, it did?
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. We're like 5 or 6 episodes in. So.
Oh, yeah. Get on that, Zeus.
I'll be on that episode where like, whatever happened to James Avery? Uncle Phil. All right. That joke is always good for whoever's new on the show. Everybody else is like, yeah, there's that same joke again. We got to talk about everything that you've done, things that you want to do. When you talked about the directing and then you talked about the teaching, there seems to be that correlation there between the two of, you know, embarking something onto like, you know, the next generation or teaching something to others. Where does that come from?
I think because I had really, really great teachers. And B, I also feel like that comes from a desire now that I've done this for 20 years. You know, as a performer, you are not quite the leader, right? Like you are not leading the process. You're not leading the vision of it. You know, you're not the executive producer on the show. You are fulfilling the vision of an author, of a writer. You're fulfilling the vision of a director, right? So, and you're also not setting the culture. And what I really enjoy is actually setting the culture of a place, you know, like setting the culture of a workplace. That was phenomenal on Warrior, by the way, because when you're in Cape Town, to have, you know, Josh and Evan there, who were always so interested in what the actors thought, especially the actors that had, you know, me, I was new to the process. I was sort of the new kid on the block, you know, like me and Dom and Chelsea, like we were all the new kids, right? But like, for the folks that have been there for a while, like watching sort of them be so open as leaders. Oh my gosh, there we are.
Oh, wow.
Oh, what a great picture.
I was just waiting for someone to say it.
Oh my gosh, I miss all of them. But yeah, like the culture of the place was that best idea wins. I love that because it makes really good art. And so me as a director, like that is my philosophy too, is I sort of go, you know what? I am the leader of this process, but it's not my job actually to know all the answers. I just have to surround myself with people that do know, that can help me, that do know more than me, and create a space that's safe enough for them to do their best work. You know, for example, like all the music recording in Cape Town, I remembered like they were like, we're going to block out 3 hours to record the songs. I was done in like 40 minutes because I think what they allowed me to do was they went like, I was like, guys, this is what I do for a living. Like I sing in recording booths and I session sing and I backup sing, like, this is what I do. So like we just like did it. You know what I mean? Like we did it and they were like, that was really fast. And I said, well, thank you for allowing me to sort of like guide the process of the session and how it was going to go. And you know, and so, and like picking keys and all of that. So like, It was really great. And honestly, like, I think it's because the people that led the process, Josh and Evan, they were like, please let us know, like, what do you, even that last song that I do at the club in episode 9, we filmed it very late at night. And Lonnie was like, you worked on Glee. Like, what did you all do? Like, how did you do musical numbers? Like, help me here. And even Lonnie asked for my opinion, which I don't get that, but that was the culture of Warrior. They were the people in charge and the leaders were true collaborators and they were interested in what we thought and I think that helped guide the process to make the best art possible.
Nice. We have a question here from Derek Chen who says, as an Asian American performer, what does Bruce Lee mean to you?
Yeah. I mean, I just remember, you know, Bruce Lee being somebody in, first of all, there weren't that many faces to look up to. You know, there weren't many people that you could consider to be an inspiration to enter show business. And Bruce Lee is and forever will be an icon and somebody that our community can look to. Also somebody that, like, you know, Bruce Lee being the success that he was in Hollywood, I think he sort of did away with the trope of that Asian men couldn't be like aggressive, that they couldn't be sexual, that they couldn't be hot, that they couldn't be badass. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think, like, so for so long, the portrayal of Asian men in Hollywood and even on Broadway and in theater was emasculated. And like, you know, Asian women were hypersexualized and Asian men were like desexualized in a lot of ways. And I think Bruce Lee like turned all of that on its head. you know, and he was really such a revolutionary leader in that way. And also just not only just a talented actor and a talented martial artist, but a philosopher in a lot of ways. And he spoke to it in a way that, like, his philosophy was something that was also so attractive, right? He was also so articulate about it. And I really, that's what he means to me. You know, he was sort of, in many ways, not just a performer I could look up to, but like a guru, a philosopher that I could look up to.
Robert Prince, local director, actually, from Niagara here, says, films that succeed is from people that film as a family with love.
Yeah.
Which is, I love this quote from him, but Robert Prince, I love you, my guy. His specialty is horror films. Uh-huh. There is so much love in horror films, dude.
Yes. Yes.
You gotta love the gore. Yeah. Thank you, Princey, for the shout out there. Now, as a director, is that something you agree with, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, as a director, what interests me the most is creating a culture where artists can really contribute and really feel like they're collaborating and really feel like they are heard. And honestly, I say that because it doesn't happen often. Do you mean there are many, those projects will remain nameless, but like there have been many times where I just go, I'm just going to shut up and do what I'm told. And I can't wait for my check to clear. You know what I mean? Like that happens a lot, you know, where you're sort of like, I'm not invested because nobody's done any work in making me feel like I am part of this process. Right. But it doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be like that. And actually, and I think Mr. Prince's like quote was perfectly like accurate, that like really, yes, that quote, that you can feel that art off the screen, off the stage, when people actually love each other and love what it is that they're doing. And, right. And you know, I think that that's a, I think it is something you can read. It's subconscious. It's not something that, you know, the scene might look exactly the same. You might film it the same. You might stage it the same, but it's something that we feel on the other side.
Love it. That's a great answer. And I think Prince, you'll like that one. Frank, you had a question as well.
Yeah. Telly, so as you're looking to the future a little bit, as now you're a mentor and you're a director and you're a teacher, hearing more about you, talk about your experience growing up, not seeing a lot of faces in Broadway, not seeing a lot of faces that look like you in film, right? Not seeing many Asian faces. What do you see with the new generation of Asian American performers? Like, what's remained constant? What's different now?
What has remained? I mean, what I think what the new generation has, and I'm so excited by this, and I think that Warrior has shows like Warrior, shows like Beef have done, and you know, movies like Crazy Rich Asians, and shows like The Brother Son, which I'm still really upset about that. Like that I'm like so mad about. I'm like, I'm so angry about it. I can't even talk about it because I binged that whole thing in like 2 days. It was so good. But like, I think this new generation, and I see it in my Asian students here at Michigan, they believe they can. And they believe they can because those things existed, you know, like in the same way that I believed I could when I watched people like Lea Salonga, when I watched people like B.D. Wong, when I watched people like Bruce Lee, right? Like those people, because they stepped out, because they were brave, because they saw possibility in themselves, has now, and they dared to defy the odds and do it, even though there weren't very many of them, that made it possible for me. And it's my hope now that I'm in leadership positions that I can make other people, this next generation, feel like it's possible for them. And I already see it happening, Frank. Like, that's what's so great about it, is that they believe they can. There's no doubt in their mind. There's no moment where they second guess. They just get up there and they do the damn thing. And you're like, yes, that's it. Yeah. They're not afraid to show up. They don't second guess themselves. They don't uncast themselves and go, oh, they're not going to cast an Asian person for this. They just get up and do it.
Yeah.
Like, because they believe they can. And I hope that my generation has like contributed to that, you know, that like my generation of art theater makers, like climbing up that hill and doing what we can to get the gigs we can, you know, my tits hanging out all over Broadway playing Aladdin. Like, I hope that that has contributed to them feeling like it's possible. Do you know what I mean?
You did it for the people.
That's right.
It's out, guns out. You had a question as well.
Yeah, I wanted to know about the play. I don't know if you are in the film as well, Allegiance.
Yes.
Based on Giorgio Takei's events of true events of his life.
Yes, I am also in the film. This was an ad actually from London. So I've been working on Allegiance since 2010. So my history with the show is now 14 years. And sometimes that is how long it takes to develop a musical and get it to Broadway. So I did my very first developmental reading of Allegiance in 2010. We took the show to San Diego, to the Old Globe in 2012. We opened the show on Broadway in 2015. We filmed the final performance, which is what a lot of people get to see now, is the Broadway production of Allegiance that's filmed. It's me and George Takei and also Leah Salonga. Leah Salonga and I play brother and sister on that. And it's working with him. This is a story that he is so passionate about because, you know, so many people know him, again, as a trailblazing Asian face that was on television in Star Trek. Right. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of people didn't know was that he and his family were part of the 120,000 Japanese people that were rounded up, forced to leave their homes after the bombing of Pearl Harbor and put into internment camps. And it's been his like mission and his passion to tell this story. And so we did the show on Broadway. We filmed it. It was great. And I thought that was like the end of my journey. Right. There's 6 years of my life that I've dedicated to helping George tell this story. Well, last year, George was like, I'm 85. I've never done a show in London. So he wanted to do the show in London. And I was like, I'll go to London with you. Let's go to London. So we did the show. We did it in a tiny off West End theater in London called the Charing Cross Theater. And he had the time of his life. So did I. I fell in love with London. Oh, there's us. There's our opening night on Broadway. And I think, you know, what's really great about that show is that show, when it opened in 2015, it opened and closed on Broadway in 4 months. And I just don't think like audiences were quite ready for the conversations about racism and also America's racist past in 2015, right? Like in 2015, just remember like that was like pre-Trump. Do you know what I mean? Like that was before, like everybody thought that was a joke, that he was going to be a president. We're like, no way, that's never going to, you know, and so much has happened between 2016, the pandemic, everything that's happened with George Floyd, our conversations about Black Lives Matter, our conversations about race and representation have changed. We've evolved into we've learned how to have uncomfortable conversations about that. And so now we do Allegiance, which is about racism in America, and we do it in 2023 and it resonates differently. Our audiences are smarter. We are better artists for everything that we've been through. And the show like had a new life, had a new meaning. We didn't change a word. We didn't change a lyric. We didn't change a word, but we did it in a much more intimate space. It's just that we've changed. Our audiences have changed. So it was a really wonderful experience getting to do that show again. And sometimes, you know, to get to revisit a role, that's a really, a lucky opportunity that I didn't think I was going to get to have. And I'm really thankful that I had that chance and to work with George, which was so great.
Kelly, you doing George's voice just hit right home to my Trekkie, daughter of a Trekkie heart. That just went right to my childhood Star Trek. All of those sounds.
Well, listen,
I loved it too.
I've worked on Allegiance with George for 14 years. And so for all of us who've been that close to him, we all have a really good George Takei impression by now. And the exciting part is actually, he's coming here to the University of Michigan on April 12th. He's going to be giving a speech about Allegiance, about the internment. Lynn Schenkel, who is our orchestrator for the Broadway production, she's on faculty here at the University of Michigan. And she's like, well, Telly, you're here. And if I can fly in Stafford Arima, who's was our director for the Broadway production, who is the artistic director of Theatre Calgary. I'm going to fly in Stafford. I'm going to fly in George from California. And we're all going to get together and talk about, again, trying to educate this next generation about this piece of American history that isn't really talked about. You know, that, and again, if we can only do better in our future if we know what happened in the past, right? So
exactly.
Yeah.
And last one, Prince says, from my experience, what helps makes a great actor is one that started in theater as great directors were once video editors. And you sound so like George. Oh my. I'm sorry. I had to. We all have to say, oh my.
Yeah.
Fun fact, George Takei appears in the pilot episode of Batman Beyond Rebirth. I actually knew that as well.
I didn't know that.
I knew that. I am such a nerd. Me too. We've had a lot of fun here, nerding out here with you, Telly. But the fun may be over, my friend, because now I don't know if you've noticed, but just quiet in the corner right below me here, the silent assassin, Chew America himself, has just been kind of salivating, wondering how this Tong Trials will go. Now, I know you're new to this, so I'm going to throw it over to Matt, and he's going to explain to you what the Tong Trials are.
Oh, buddy, I've been so nice to you over these emails, but I can't anymore, so I'm sorry. So, for those who have not been really well-versed in our show, we have this thing called the Tong Trials, where I am going to be asking a series of questions, and you're going to answer them to the best of your ability. And when it's all said and done, we will have our hands raised in the air, and it will either go one of two ways. Either you are part of our Tong, or you never make it and we just cast you out, and it's just over and done with. Now, we've had a 100% success rate from both newcomers and, you know, from Langley and Perry coming back. So their card has been stamped again. But now it is your turn.
Oh gosh, I'm so nervous.
So with that all said, Telly, are you ready for the Tong Trials?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now, being that you are new, you do have the option of how you're going to get this work. Either A, you are going to do this season's Tong Trial, or you do the OG Tong Trials. Which path will you be choosing for today?
This season's?
Fair enough. See, no one dares go for the original. I love it.
Oh, they're too tough for the original trials.
I might have to just not give a choice next time. Okay, but anyways, let's get this underway. Question number one. If you had a time machine, would you revisit your past or see your future, and why?
I would revisit my past. I don't think I'd like to be surprised about my future.
Very nice. I like this so far. Question number two. Name a cartoon show or movie that you feel they should never do a reboot or remake of. It should just be left alone as is.
Left alone as is. The West Wing.
Good one.
Don't touch it.
Can I add the newsroom to that as well?
Yeah, don't touch it.
Yeah, sorry.
He's doing good so far. Question number three, and this seems to be the most favorite one of them all. Name a hidden talent of yours that would surprise people.
Oh gosh. Hidden talents. Like I show them all because they like, I don't know, like I like all the talents. Oh, I juggle a little bit.
Ooh.
Yeah. I juggle a little bit. I'm rusty though, but I do juggle a little bit.
How many things? Like,
oh, just three. Like, well, I had three? To do it in a show. Yeah. No. Like, and I'm very rusty, y'all. So don't ask me to juggle.
Right now, or else.
Yeah. Oh gosh. I can mind.
Step play.
All right. Next one. Finish this sentence. Never have I ever blank.
Never have I ever skied. I've never gone skiing.
Okay.
And that's because I'm from Brooklyn, and I don't believe I should put on long things on my feet to slide down snow. That sounds crazy to me. So, nope, no skiing.
But don't you have a good friend from Calgary, didn't you just say?
Yep, nope. No skiing. No, thank you. No, ma'am.
Nah.
That sounds like no fun. It sounds like a lot of falling.
I respect the decision. Next question. What is the best meal of the day? Breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
Oh, I love lunch.
That is the first lunch we've ever gotten.
I love lunch.
What is the go-to lunch?
I like a big lunch. Like, I like a big lunch and a light dinner. I will, like, feast on lunch and, like, fuel up. Do you know what I mean?
Do you do breakfast at all or no?
I will do a very light breakfast, yeah. But, coffee is essential. Like, don't talk to me until I've had a cup of coffee.
Same.
Can't do it.
Me too.
Don't, like, I can't function. Yeah. No. Like, I time the coffee maker so that it's brewing and I smell it and I go, like, I like wake up.
I love like that he rises like a vampire.
my coffee's ready. Oh, like, absolutely. Yeah. Vampire.
I can tolerate people. Like,
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
One cup of coffee.
We're just doing count impressions now. Here we go. Let's go. So now, of course, we've back in the day in school, you know, we always had those fun little awards where it was like best smile, most likely to succeed in, you know, whatever. Now, if you were given an award, you know, from the Warrior cast, what would that award be?
From the Warrior cast?
Yeah, what would they award you?
Best oh my fans? Gosh. Most fabulous.
Hey,
you know what I mean? Like, I was like, I think they were like not ready for like, not ready for like, hey y'all, yeah, absolutely. They were not ready for that. They were not ready for the tall hair and the guy liner and everything that is Telly. And you know, I mean, like, I'm very out. I'm very proud. And then you get to play Marcel, and it's like, oh, delicious. All of that gets to come out and like in real life too. And it was so fun. So yes,
most fabulous.
Most fabulous.
I fucks with it. I love it. Next one. So out of all the characters that you've played, which one would actually be your friend in real life?
Oh, I'd be friends with Marcel in real life.
Hey.
Absolutely. Oh. Not only would I be friends with Marcel in real life, but I'd be like, are you done with that corset? Can I wear it to the next party? Like, I would like, I would also be friends with Marcel because I feel like Marcel would bring me to the like most fun parties, but I would also want to raid the closet. Darian Hong, he outdid himself. There is a costume that he made for the final scene that never got put on air because they were like, this is actually like too out there. It's actually like too fabulous and too out there. And like, it was for the last song and it never, and I told Darian, I said, you save that. Like, when it's time for me to go to the Met Gala, I'm going to call you and I'm going to ask you to like save this. It was an asymmetric corset that like went across, it was, and it never made it onto the show. I'm really mad about it, but Darian promised me he'd save it. So yeah, Marcel.
Love it.
Now you can plead the fifth on this one. This isn't part of the Tong trials or anything, but because all you were talking about raiding his wardrobe, did you take any?
Did I take any? I didn't dare. I didn't dare because honestly, like, they were so fabulous. Darian did such a great job on them. And when you do the fittings in Cape Town, you are there and the people, the actual like people building the clothes, the seamstresses and the pattern makers and all that, they are right there. So they'll come in and like, I got to meet some of the amazing craftspeople that made like the leather makers and all of that made the things. And I was like, oh gosh, I know how much time and effort went in. I mean, all of that, that's not pulled from a shop. That's not pulled from storage. That is, every inch of that is being made in Cape Town for my body. I didn't dare steal it. Like, cause I was like, in many ways I was like, it's not mine to steal. Somebody worked hours and like blood, sweat and tears went into this. Like if that person stole it, fine. Yeah. You know, but it
it's
really belongs
Kelly's,
to them.
It's Marcel.
Yeah, it's not mine to steal. Absolutely.
It's Marcel's.
Yeah.
But you could. No, I'm just kidding. Sorry.
But I was.
But you could. It
but
does
I was.
You.
It doesn't mean I wasn't tempted to.
Number one on the call sheet, you can get away with stealing one thing, or two things.
That's right.
And that's only if the show goes longer than three seasons.
Yeah, I wonder if Koji like stole a suit or something. That'd be curious.
You know he did.
Yeah.
You know Tobin's got a hatchet somewhere too.
Right.
Sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
Oh, you're good. Next question. Describe your perfect day off.
My perfect day off. This is actually my day off from rehearsal. I think my perfect day off involves a really good meal, like a really good meal, because sometimes as a singer you don't get to like eat like the acid reflux and the jumping up and you know, as Aladdin, the first 20 minutes of the show is all I did was like jump up and down and jump across buildings and jump across moving carts and things. So like you don't get to like eat. Like I like to throw down after a show.
Okay.
You know, so like eat a really good meal on a day off and this is going to sound so cheesy and watch RuPaul's Drag Race. That's like, that's like a good, like, because it doesn't require like brain activity, but it's really entertaining. Like, it's not like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like the West Wing where you have to like listen to every word, or, you know what I mean? Mm. And like, or even like, I think like Warrior demands like your attention, you know, like, because there's little visuals and details. RuPaul's Drag Race is like a formula. It's fun. It's campy. Like, it's, you know, I like to shut my brain off for a day.
So like, I love food. So, and you keep saying, yo, the good meal to throw down on. What is it? Like, what is like the, oh yes, this is it. I need this.
I mean, there are so many, like when you say that, I first of all, I love all kinds of food. So like when I think of really good comfort day off food, it's like a really good bowl of ramen, like really good. or it can be like a steak, like a medium rare steak with like fresh horseradish, or it can be like, I live in Harlem. There's a place called Charles's Pan Fried Chicken that's like right near my house with like the best fried chicken. Like, that's also a really good meal. You know what I love about fried chicken is every culture fries chicken, every culture, right?
But not, and if like they in had, Harlem.
And if they bring fried chicken to the UN, I think we'd have world peace. I've always said that. If every culture just brings their fried chicken and we like talk it out over a bucket of fried chicken, I think we'd be fine.
Man, so
is that the go-through meal for you and your husband, or
Your husband? Yeah. We both love to eat. Absolutely.
I'm hungry now.
Now
I'm thinking that you said medium rare steak, and I'm like, yes, oh yes, and the horseradish, oh
yeah,
oh yeah, yeah. I'm thinking the same. I'm like, ooh, can't wait to get some fleshy meat in my mouth.
The last couple talk trials that we've been doing so far, the guests who have been really honing in on the food, man, they've been fucking getting complete thumbs up from me. And I think personally, you're in again. I don't know what the rest of them are going to be, but we're going to find out. Let's finish this out really quick. Next, everybody was really rooting for this one. We're all out for karaoke, all right? Yeah. What is the song you're choosing to just kill that performance? What is it?
It's got to be like an 80s. It's got to be like a Madonna Like a Prayer or something. Do you know what I mean? It's got to be something where like everybody can clap and sing along to and it's fun. So like, and I'm such an 80s kid, so probably like a Madonna song, you know.
Bonus points if you give a little sample, and you can deny this if you want.
Oh yeah. Life is a mystery. Everyone must stand alone. I hear you call my name, and it feels like home, just like a prayer. Oh, your voice can take me there.
Oh. I'm playing the part of Leon in this commercial, in this video.
Such a crush on Leon.
Yeah, like, come on. Like, come. Who wouldn't, like, everybody? Everybody would be singing along. Like, that's the point of karaoke. If you can get everybody to, like, join you.
Well, you definitely did. And saw Frank drawn down there. That's never happened.
Yeah, facts. And finally, he's reached the end point. And finally, and we're just going to segue right into the song portion of it. If you had a theme song every time you walked into a room, what song would it be?
Oh, I mean, I think it's like, this is going to sound so gay, but I think it's Diana Ross. I'm coming out.
Hey.
I want the world to know, got to let it show. I mean, I think it's got to be that. Come on. That's always a good time.
I was thinking that when you said Madonna, I already had Diana Ross in my head for you. I'm like,
yeah, that's a good one.
I was thinking Whitney Houston.
Oh, Whitney too. I mean, I love a Whitney for sure. For sure. But yeah, but like entrance music, that's the one.
Yeah. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the Tong trial. So now it is judgment time. So Tong, put your hands in the air, and we are going to figure out whether Telly is in.
Please accept me.
Never making it. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Yo.
And there it is. Ladies and gentlemen, he has made it through the Tong trials. Telly is in. Congratulations. He's one of us.
Thank you. I belong. I belong. I belong. Listen, it's all about Marcel was all about a community that belongs, and I found and this tribe accepts me. So thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Telly, whenever we can do a group karaoke, you're going last.
Yeah.
No one's following you.
Like, yeah.
I'm telling you, you posted once the Mariah Carey challenge, my old challenge. I recorded and I didn't have the courage to post.
Oh, you should have posted it. We're going to find that and post that up here. No, this was great. And you know what? You had me at Aaron Sorkin. As soon as you dropped the West Wing, I was like, oh, all right. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the greatest screenwriter I've ever. Him and Tropper. That's when people Tropper. Ask me what Tropper's like, I'm like, Tropper is a violent version of, like, for real though. Yes. Because his writing is so good. And the character, it's all about character and all about story. I'm just and just about that dialogue. And I absolutely fucking love Aaron Sorkin. And never thought I'd like anything more than The West Wing, but The Newsroom. Oh my God, that got me. As I go off on my little tangent right there. All right. And Heather Joy says, yay, that was awesome. I agree. And one last thing I guess we should leave with before we leave. I need you to explain this. This was sent to me.
Oh my gosh. yeah, that's me teaching Atlanta. Hoon. These are such good memories. Oh my gosh. Such a good time. Oh, Nick my Disney brother.
Oh yes, Timon.
Such a good time. And you know, and like, oh, Dom. And
Dom.
Jason came and saw me in London. Like, he was in London filming something and he came and saw Legions. It was so sweet. I just saw Liv in New York. Liv is, she's working on a documentary as a director. So I'm so happy for her. Like, so like, you know, I we've all kept in touch really. And, it is, those 4 months in Cape Town was such a dream. And I really do believe that, like, we made something very special. And I just have to also thank all of you for, like, everything you're doing to, like, help us get the word out there about the show. Like, you know, it's been a really wonderful, reunion in a lot of ways. Like, our WhatsApp group, like, blows up every day about, like, how we can, like, get more eyeballs on our show. Yes. So, and you all are doing such a great part in that. So I have to thank you all for doing that with us.
Oh, thank you. Absolute
pleasure. Thank you for being on the show. And as you said, there are things you can do, folks. Obviously, that first 2 week period is over, but let's keep it up. We had you're in the top 10 in the US
still
for 2 weeks. Top 10 in the world for 2 weeks as well. This is amazing. We need to do more though. Go out, keep watching it. Hashtag Warriors season 4. Hashtag W4ier. I'll say it
it's
that way.
Warrior every time. With the four number with the number 4 as the A. I can't
figure yes, that but out. Reading that, but trying to say that audibly does not work. Hashtag just, renew warrior. Hashtag
just
warrior.
Warrior. That's it. You just say warrior.
RCR joining the show saying love you guys, hatches up. Now the one thing you don't know about this show, Telly, is when we leave, we all leave and we say what's on Steph's shirt there. Let's get some sticky. But we do it we all start off, oh, and it's on that shirt. So we all start off on the right, and then we work our way left.
You're right.
Go to your right.
Yeah, you're right.
Go to your right.
He's like, no. Yes.
And then we're just gonna go 3, 2, 1, let's get it. Worst ending in any show history. Love you all. Hope you had a great show, and thanks so much.